What's going on, guys? It is episode 18, week 15, and the second week of the fantasy playoffs here on the Fantasy Process Report. As always, Matt and Nick in suburban Philadelphia, Jason in Miami, bringing you the best in fantasy football news, information, and unfortunately playoff losses this week.
And trash talking, among other things.
Yeah, some people are doing better than other people this time of year.
It's unfortunate.
I pulled out a win despite a .-9 performance out of Jared Goff. So I'm feeling good about that.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. If you had Todd Gurley or Jared Goff and you got a win, good job. Because the odds were against you considering how much you were probably relying on those two guys.
Well, it was really George Kittle that did it for me. I mean, that first quarter, I actually have him in both my leagues, and in my other league, the guy who I'm playing against, he texted me, and he goes, "Fucking George Kittle." And I was at the bar with my brother watching the Eagles game, so I wasn't paying attention to that at all, and I'm like, "Why, what happened?" And so I look at it, and in the first quarter, he had 29 fantasy points in that standard point perception league. So, yeah, he did more than his fair share to boost my team this past week.
Yeah, while people had some duds last week, we certainly had plenty of people who, had phenomenal weeks, like you just said, George Kittle. Amari Cooper had a crazy week.
I don't want to talk about it. Don't bring that guy's name up ever again.
Amari Cooper.
No!
No! Better guys to have right now going into the playoffs.
That's absolutely wrong. He played against a B-team secondary.
Probably a flex player
Absolute
for you.
Absolute garbage cornerbacks. He'll never put up numbers like that again because of the garbage that they had in the secondary.
He's a flex
Amari Cooper's not a good wide receiver. Dak Prescott's not a good quarterback. They got lucky that that's who they played.
Playing like a wide receiver number one right now.
He's not playing
like
he did wide receiver number one.
Guys, did you see that at the last play of the game? He caught a touchdown reception.
Yeah,
it was an interception that just got tipped up in the air, and he somehow fell into his lap for a touchdown.
The cornerback got his hand on the football.
It was an unfortunate play.
It was just unlucky that it bounced up instead of down.
A lot of other quarterbacks might have made a pick on that.
I don't think so. He barely got his hand on the ball. I don't think that I'm not upset that he didn't catch it.
I was going to say, if anything, he made a good play.
He made a great play.
Yeah, he made a great play.
It was an unfortunate bounce.
It was Rasul Douglas. He played lights out all game long. He was the only person in the secondary, other than Malcolm Jenkins, to do his job. And then he gets stuck with that play to end the game.
Mm. Tough break.
And it's one of those things. It was third down, too. So if that ball deflects down, the Cowboys are now trying to field goal. And the Eagles still have time to drive down the field, and the way the offense was moving at that point in the game, I think they probably could have gotten into range. It's just unfortunate the ball went up instead of down.
Yeah. I think the saddest thing about it is, like, after that loss, I was ready to say, like, oh, well, there goes the Eagles' playoff chances. And then I looked at the standings and realized that they were only a half a game behind the Vikings.
Yep, half game behind the Vikings,
for
tied
the second
with the Panthers.
Wild card spot.
It's... The wild card is still available, and the plot only thickened today.
That's crazy. Unbelievable.
Can the Giants magically
still do it?
I believe in Big Dick Nick.
Oh, man. Well.
All right. So, going back to fantasy.
Another big performance.
Before we do anything, I don't want to talk about performances. I want to air a grievance right now.
In our league,
did I lose the last place game? I might have. It might have happened. But even losing the last place league, I would have outscored two of the playoff teams and would have advanced. That being said, the other three teams, the other three teams that were in the playoffs would have outscored all, or that were out of the playoffs, other than me, that were eliminated, would have outscored all four playoff teams playing this week. It was a horrible showing by all four playoff teams, and you guys should all be embarrassed that that's what you guys did, even in a win. I'm mad because I would have beaten two of the playoff teams, even though I lost the last place game.
Woulda, shoulda, but you didn't.
Bullshit.
I'm going to import a complaint disclosure right before that tangent you just went on there. So.
I'm so angry. So incredibly angry.
Good job,
65
Dave.
Points from my brother and 69 points from Ryan. That's garbage. Ryan, who had opposite records from Dan and made the playoffs.
You came in last.
That is pretty incredible.
Dan doubled his point total. Ridiculous.
Yeah, what are you going to say? Actually, yeah. I also have something to say before we get into it. I would like to issue an apology to Josh Allen. Because I guess myself, along with every NFL analyst, draft, you know, analyst, all that kind of stuff, it would appear that all of us missed the line on his scouting report that stated very clearly that he's the best running quarterback of all time. So I just would like to say, sorry, Josh, I missed that. Sorry, as you were, keep being the best running quarterback of all time, because I guess that's what it is now.
Yeah. Well, before we get further into the actual fantasy, I did want to take a moment here to, you know, during Thanksgiving, surprised you and Alicia with some cheesecake, compliments of my real estate team. So I think we...
Where was my cheesecake?
We hand delivered it, what? Jason. I thought we were friends.
So where's this going?
So I thought we were friends.
We got you guys a little bit of a Christmas gift as well.
Oh, so. there is a gift here for me. This might actually make me feel much better. Yeah. What do we got here? Oh no! Oh no! You saved the box.
So for those of you that aren't here, Hungy just is uncovering and opening the box for his last place trophy, the Pitbull.
Photos.
He can't even do that. Relax.
Photos to go up on our Twitter account post show at PPR underscore official.
Can't even do that. Well.
No. Oh, this is garbage.
It's so bad.
There's a button.
Yeah, you got to flick the switch on the bottom and then click the button. You can flick it in four directions, too, and it is a different thing for every direction.
We put it down here with the marlins. Dolly. He said the word dolly. And I now want to die. Great. Well,
here you go, Hungy. We also prepared a Sharpie for you to sign it, so the world... will forever know that you are part of Pitbull history.
And we're going to sign right on top of the head.
Hungy's signing it huge. He's not leaving room for any other people to sign it in the future.
Hey, Nick, here's what he might be doing. He might just be drawing MH, and then he can put 18, 19, 20, 21, 22 underneath it.
Oh, it's too late, Jason.
No, I just did massive Hungy 18 right
did
on
not
the top.
Take form for your signature. He just wrote Hungy in big letters.
Anyway, unfortunately, this is the life that I live now.
You were so excited when you were opening that.
I thought it was a nice gift. You've ruined my life. I hate both of you. Moving on, we're never going to talk about this again. Pictures will be up on the Twitter page, Nick, immediately, if Nick wants to post them at any point. Yep, so, unfortunately, it is what it is.
I'm glad Jason started talking about Josh Allen, too, because then you, like, forgot about it for a second.
I did. The ghost is going to eat all these things. No. We dropped a bunch of stuff on the ground.
The styrofoam that was keeping Mr. Pitbull safe and sound inside the box.
It's really upsetting.
Yeah, he traveled a long way.
He did.
Really upsetting.
Straight from Miami. So you're going to be displaying that on your mantle in the family room.
Unfortunately.
That is not a question. That is a statement.
Not our request.
So after that, we can get back into some fantasy football that might be more relevant to all of you here. What do we got first on the agenda? Maybe this isn't quite as relevant to all of you, but I noticed...
That's the first thing you had listed in the rundown?
I did, because I wanted to talk about this before I forgot.
This show gets more and more off the rails every time.
Jason, I noticed you changed your fantasy football team name this week.
I did.
I don't know...
Yes, I did.
Who in their right mind waits until after the first week of the playoffs to change their fantasy team name when they've had it the same thing all year long?
Well, it was because, I made it, I always wait to make my team name until after I draft my team, so that way I can make a pun off
of it's like, after
one
you
of my
drafted.
Player's team. Yeah, so it was the Prince of Bel-Air the entire year because I had Le'Veon Bell, which unfortunately did not work out, as some of you may or may not know. But... yeah, for whatever, like, even after I dropped it, Le'Veon Bell, I just forgot to change the name, and I just didn't notice it until, like, this week. I've been bored at work on, like, Tuesday, I think. And I was like, wait, I haven't even had Le'Veon Bell on my team in like 4 weeks. Why is my team name still this? So I was like looking at my roster, and I just like thought about it, and I was like, oh, Philip Lindsay, Lindsay something. Let me think of a Lindsay, and then Lindsay Lohan's Booger Sugar just popped into my head, and I went with that.
I personally think it's bad juju to switch your name up mid-season. I went with a name based off of Larry Fitzgerald on my team, and he's kind of been right on the cusp of being dropped all season long, but he's been on the bench, you know, for sure, just because of the team name. But interesting to change your name at this point in the season.
I mean, Philip Lindsay has been a baller. He's been a standard running back for me for the past couple weeks, at least. I haven't even considered taking him out for a little while.
Hungy's dabbing over here because he is excited all about the fact that he picked up Le'Veon Bell to use as a keeper, I assume, is why he's dabbing.
Potentially.
So what about Marlon Mack? He uses a first-round keeper.
What about Marlon Mack?
And I picked up Cooper Kupp after him, dropped him, too. And that's a 10th-round keeper.
You really are the garbage man, just picking up everybody else's trash. I am
just grabbing the trash, ready for next year.
Yeah, man. Pitbull ended up in that garbage bin. all right, well, I guess that's... I won't say fair, because I disagree with
you. You made the team name Lindsay Lohan's Booger Sugar. Why don't you just make it Booger McFarland's Booger Sugar?
Well, because
I don't have Booger McFarland on my team.
Lindsay.
Yeah, but you use Booger, and Booger McFarland
I did
sucks.
Think of, I saw that and immediately thought of Booger McFarland.
Well, maybe
that's
tracker.
That too. Because I think actually most people, when you think of Lindsay Lohan... I actually don't even think of, like, Parent Trap or Mean Girls. I actually think of her getting arrested for cocaine, like, several times. And those crazy mugshots and how she went insane in, like, 2010. But, yeah, I was like, Lindsay Lohan, she had some run-ins. She was the cocaine thing, right? And I looked up, like, some news headlines, and it was like, yep, let's go with the cocaine thing here.
Very random. That's very random, Jason.
Well, I like it.
All right, well, let's get back to football. Before we look ahead, I kind of wanted to look at last week's games. We had a pretty fantastic week in football. I kind of struggle with saying that just because of the Eagles fans here might not agree with me, but from an unbiased, neutral NFL fan, I'd say it was a pretty good week in football. We had a lot of really good matchups, and so I just kind of came up with a list. Don't know if you guys have any takeaways from this past week. One thing that I might be kind of switching my opinion on, I don't know if you've listened to our past episodes, but I have noted that I think that next year Todd Gurley is the number one draft pick overall.
I think that's very clear.
But
yeah, I think that still holds up.
I don't know. I mean, the past few weeks, I don't know if it's an anomaly, but... he's been doing poor, and Saquon is continuing to put up ridiculous numbers this past week. And hardly he put up 27.7 points. That's a half a point per reception. And this is all against fairly good opponents, and the fact that there's nobody else, there's no Odell there this past week. Saquon's getting it done no matter what. Like, I know there's the term must-start players, regardless, matchup-proof players, but he's defying that and going even one step further, and he's having phenomenal performances regardless of the opponent.
He is having phenomenal performances, but so is Todd Gurley for 90% of the season. I think what's helping Saquon is the Giants are finally using him. And you look at the game against the Eagles, and they stopped using him in the second half. Straight up, they just stopped. I honestly think you guys might have won that game if you kept using Saquon.
Oh, yeah.
But you stopped.
But the question I have is Saquon making the argument to be the number one overall pick?
I think he's in that discussion. You know who a dark horse is, though? Christian McCaffrey.
This guy, he's number one.
No, he's not number one.
He's a dark... that's why I said he's a dark horse. I think it goes Gurley, Saquon, and then maybe
number
some combination
one is usually
of Zeke or
undisputed.
McCaffrey. But Zeke, I think Zeke is still up there just because he gets so much volume, and I think he's been getting used in the passing game more often. But
he's similar
Christian
to
McCaffrey, he's making a push.
I think Zeke's similar to Saquon in a sense.
Yeah, I think Saquon, honestly, he reminds me a lot of Maurice Jones-Drew, where he was on those bad Jaguars teams for a while, but like you could still draft him and start him and play him no matter what. Even didn't matter who was at quarterback, didn't matter who was at wide receiver, didn't matter what the offensive line was like. Maurice Jones-Drew, he would put up numbers.
Yeah. Hungy's tired as usual. I apologize for the yawning. And oh yeah, I don't know if you heard some like loud construction earlier. We are getting the backsplash put in my kitchen, so we have somebody here right now, you know, working on that. So I apologize if you hear any of that.
Our in studio receptionist is only trying to keep him quiet.
Yes.
Our producer's pretty mad. our content organizer is back in the.
The content organizer.
Yeah.
What's the content organizer's name again? I'm not over there, so
Mike.
I don't know. Oh, Mike. Okay, gotcha.
Just Mike. One of those first name type of people.
All right.
Yeah.
I think Saquon is easily a top three pick. I think Todd Gurley's number one, and I don't think that's a question.
I don't know.
I would agree.
I'm on the fence now.
I would probably say
leaning towards Gurley.
I would
still,
say Todd Gurley's probably number one, and then two and three in no particular order are Saquon Barkley and Antonio Brown.
Put AB up there still?
I do. Still. Mm.
See, I don't know. I always just get scared of Big Ben.
I mean, what are
his ability to find him in a consistent basis.
Yeah. But I still think he's the best wide receiver in the league, hands down.
Mm. I agree. From a physical standpoint, just athleticism, all in all, I'd say Antonio Brown is definitely top wide receiver in the league still. That's coming from a Giants fan, too.
Yeah. Well, I'd say Odell's probably
top three.
Top three.
Some people wouldn't put him top three.
If you're one of those people that put, what's his name? The guy in the Vikings.
Adam Thielen?
Yeah, he is.
You don't even know his name. Come on, Hungy.
Yeah.
Come on.
The guy in the Vikings. The white guy.
Hungy's not high on white guys.
That's not true.
Christian McCaffrey.
I didn't think he was the number
Adam
one
Thielen.
Overall pick. Then Christian McCaffrey's
Pitbull.
Pitbull's Hispanic.
He looks white.
He uses the word "dale" in the saying.
Hispanic Americans are things.
Yeah, he's throwing it in there, trying to be hip.
Trying to be hip. Okay.
Yeah.
Where were you going with that point about white people?
This is.
Adam Thielen, I mean. What were you saying about Adam Thielen?
I was going to say, do his numbers show him as a top five fantasy receiver?
He fell off a little bit, though.
Because the Vikings offense started to fall apart.
That's true.
Which brings us to the firing of John DeFilippo. Where did that come from?
They clearly
this is a guy who was getting head coaching looks. Like, I think even the Packers were looking at bringing in John DeFilippo as the head coach.
Well, they're not going to make a move till the offseason.
No, they wouldn't. But I don't think it's a done deal that he just takes an offensive coordinator position this season or even early on in the offseason. I think he's got
I don't think he takes
head coaching potential.
You don't think?
No, I don't think he takes it. I think he...
You think he makes it to the offseason?
He makes it to the offseason, yeah, for sure. 100%.
But Hugh Jackson got a team within a week.
Hugh Jackson is working some small job. He's not working a coordinator position.
Mm, I know, but still, he's...
They invented a title for him.
He's in the door there, and that's, I think, going to lead to something else, but...
I think he was buddies with Marvin Lewis before. But it is wild that a guy who was tabbed as, like, an up-and-coming head coach could just be fired in the middle of the season. Like... And have it not impact like his head coaching prospects. Like,
and
this
like
is,
I get Mike Zimmer
weird to
is
see.
Defensive oriented, and DeFilippo's offense was not what he was looking for. You know, Mike Zimmer was probably looking for a pounding running game, and DeFilippo is all about.
He did, yeah. He said it a couple times.
Movement and motion and misdirection and that just they weren't on the same page. But it blows my mind that they would fire him in the first year of having him as offensive coordinator with three more games to go.
I wonder if in these types of situations, last year for instance, was Nick Foles the reason why DeFilippo looked so good? Or was DeFilippo the reason why Nick
Foles
looked so good?
Well, I think it's a three-part combination. I think it's a Doug Peterson, Frank Reich, John DeFilippo trifecta is the reason why he looked so good.
But just
when
in general.
When you have DeFilippo as his quarterback's coach and can work with his motion, that's going to help. When you've got Frank Reich and Doug Peterson studying the tape that Foles... The 27-2 season, they ran a lot of RPOs with Chip Kelly. They studied that. They turned to something that worked for Foles before, and they incorporated that into the game plan.
I'll tell you what, though. If Foles comes out here and looks good, I think he deserves all the credit in the world, and I think that DeFilippo was made to look good because Nick Foles, the quarterback, the backup quarterback who was, quote-unquote, gifted to him in that situation because they went on to win the Super Bowl. I think Nick Foles is the real reason why the Eagles did good and why DeFilippo was so highly touted. I think that
this goes across teams, though.
Let's look at the Vikings last year. Case Keenum came out of nowhere and made the Vikings offense one of the top offenses in the league. Pat Shurmur was the offensive coordinator there and the one who pretty much got touted, and he got the head coaching gig with the New York Giants. I haven't been completely impressed with him, and I wonder, was Case Keenum the reason?
No, because what has Case Keenum done since?
He's
yeah, what did
Denver
he do before and
since? Like, shit options.
I don't see that. I don't think that's the same thing at all.
But I don't know. I think sometimes the...
I think Kirk Cousins is incredibly underperforming. And I think he's extremely overrated. I think they way overpaid for him.
Kirk Cousins blows, man.
Yeah.
Just watching him, giving him the eye
test. They gave him what? $98 million fully guaranteed or something like that?
I think it was 78. But either way, yeah. I think, although with Nick Foles, like, I think it's, to me personally, I think it's the coordinators and the coaches and stuff, because he had that great stretch in the end of the season. Well, not the end of the season so much, but the playoffs and the Super Bowl, obviously. And it was a lot of movement and creative plays and stuff like that. And then, I get it's not a huge sample size, but the first two or however many, it was two or three games this season when he was in there and before Carson came back, and it wasn't super inspiring. So, I mean, he can obviously turn it around. Maybe he's a cold weather guy. Who knows?
Kirk's contract was $84 million fully guaranteed.
I like the title of that article.
Yeah, this actually was written yesterday. Title of the article from Forbes.com is Kirk Cousins is more than an $84 million mistake for the Vikings.
Did you guys see Nick Wright's tweet about that?
Nick Wright is terrible.
I agree with you.
He needs to shave his neck, beard, and get off TV.
I tweeted something.
No, so Hunky, I will.
What did he tweet?
I agree with you. So normally I do not like Nick Wright. I think he's annoying. I don't like his opinions. But today's someone else tweeted something along the lines of like, yeah, I get all the Kirk Cousins, you know, slander and stuff, but like, name me a better option in the offseason. And Nick Wright quote tweeted it and was like, yes, I'm going to a Honda dealership. I don't see any better cars here. Let me pay $84,000 for this Honda Civic. Like, it doesn't make sense. Like, you're saying, okay, he's the best option because there were no other better options. It still doesn't mean you overpay for him. Like, sure, he might have been the best option, but he's not worth $84
million. Yeah. Can I read this
off? Yeah, go ahead, honey.
This is the most outrageous, and I heard a couple of these today, just in the wake of the DeFilippo firing, but I didn't hear all seven of these. Kirk Cousins' career stats. Career record in primetime games, 5-13. Career record versus winning teams, 4-24. Career record versus winning teams this season, 0-5. Career road record, 12-23-2. Career record on Monday Night Football, 0-7.
Damn.
That's horrendous.
Yeah, those are all terrible percentages.
That's really bad.
I think that the record versus winning teams is what speaks the most to me in that graphic. 4-24 in his career against teams that have a winning record. That is, I assume, over 500. Not 500 included.
Yeah, it's over 500.
Over 500.
When they played the Eagles, I think the Eagles were 2-2.
4-24. Damn.
Yikes.
Kirk Cousins is not the real deal.
Ugh. Wow.
And they had some halfway decent teams in Washington, too.
Bill called him the new Sam Bradford.
Oh my God, that's even worse than Bradford. No one ever gave Bradford an $84 million fully guaranteed deal.
Yeah.
That's way worse than Bradford. Fully guaranteeing something like that's ridiculous.
What's sad is, like, they gave it to him and this is still the beginning of it. We're still in the beginning of his contract.
What's really sad is that Cleveland could have had him for this probably the same price while bringing in Jarvis Landry and drafting Saquon first overall. Cleveland could have done all that.
Yeah, well, Cleveland, you know, I don't really blame them for what they've been doing because they look a lot better than what they have in the past, so.
I'd still take Kirk over Baker Mayfield.
Would you?
Yeah.
For the long term? I think for the future, Baker Mayfield is definitely the better option.
I haven't seen enough out of Baker to really make that call.
I think that he's right now on pretty much the same level as Kirk Cousins today as we speak. And he's got a lot more growing to do. Kirk Cousins is probably past his prime. He's probably already hit his prime, and he's got paid based off of his prime.
What, 29, 30?
I don't know, but I don't like that.
Ha! Ha! I see what you did.
You like that?
You like that? You like that? You like that? Thanks, Kirk. He is 30. He is 30.
30. So, I mean, like, age-wise, he's maybe not out of the woods yet, but just watching him play the game, he can't complete simple passes. And if you look at Adam Thielen, a lot of his catches this year have been amazing catches that weren't the easiest for him to catch in the world, so that's why he's looked so good.
Yeah.
Ugh.
We'll kind of go off of Kirk Cousins and his old team there. The Washington Redskins played against my New York Giants this week. Looked pretty horrendous for the most part.
Horrendous is probably an understatement.
But they had Mark Sanchez in most of the game.
The Sanchez!
Sanchez. He's been my Fortnite character since he got the...
Mr. Butt Fumble himself.
Since he came in for Cole McCoy, he's been my Fortnite character, Mark Sanchez.
Really?
Yeah, I changed him.
Nice.
But yeah, the Redskins look much better without him. Any
team looks much better without Mark Sanchez.
They had Josh Johnson come in, and Josh Johnson led the team in fantasy points. I think he came in at, like, halftime. So he only played, like, half the game. He had, like, 23.5 points. Made some noise on the ground, I believe. I'm pulling the stats up right now. But the Redskins, I don't want to say they almost came back on the Giants, but after Giants had about 40 or so unanswered points, Redskins went and scored 16 points easy. So, not that I think that any of the Redskins players are really relevant, but I think that it was very interesting just to see that Mark Sanchez came in there, they gave him the start. He did awful, and then you can have this guy that hasn't played a game in 3 years, I believe it was, just come in and tear it up against the same team in the same game.
Well, maybe because there's no film on him. Everyone knows what Mark Sanchez can and cannot do, more importantly.
What can... No, stop right there. What can Mark Sanchez do?
Well, I'm saying, more importantly, what he can't do. Because
he can't do anything except run into his offensive lineman and fumble the ball. Mark Sanchez went 6 for 14 for 38 yards, no touchdowns, and 2 picks. And a fumble. No, fumble was against the Eagles. Sorry, no fumble that game. But 6 for 14 for 38 yards, no touchdowns, 2 picks. Mark Sanchez can't do anything.
Mm. God bless his soul.
I was amazed Mark Sanchez was still an option as an NFL quarterback. Like,
well,
when the Redskins announced that they were signing Mark Sanchez, I thought he had just, like, disappeared like Sean Alexander, just gone. But then he was back.
I feel like it's literally just a case of, wait, who knows our playbook already? We don't have time to incorporate somebody else.
That's exactly what it is.
He's never played for them.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
When did you play for them?
Mark Sanchez?
Yeah.
He came back. That's why they got him, is because he knew their playbook.
No, I think he knew one of the coaches.
Was that what it is?
Yeah, he was never on the Redskins before. He was on the Eagles and Cowboys, but he knew one of the coaches somehow. I feel like that's what I heard in one of the telecasts. But yeah, it is always funny that like you see these guys just come back out of nowhere. Like when I was working in Oklahoma City in 2017, Justin Masterson was a pitcher on that team, and I like when I saw he was on the team, I was like, oh my god, I forgot about him. Like, he used to be a good pitcher with the Red Sox, and then he signed that big deal with the Indians, and then I guess just kind of maybe fizzled out a little bit, and then for a few years wasn't in the majors, and then he was trying to make a major league comeback, and coming back through, he signed with like the Pirates the year before, and then signed with the Dodgers, and so he was with us for the minor league season in 2017. And then I saw a report like 2 days ago that he officially retired, and now he's doing missionary work in Africa. And I was like, oh, that's fun. But it's like these guys, you know, they some of them like don't really have a choice when they kind of like stop playing. Like Mark Sanchez was just terrible, so like no one would sign him. And like you always wonder like what they do when they're just like waiting to be signed, or like if they ever will be signed, or maybe it's just like, oh wait, that's my retirement, I guess.
Yeah. So guys, you catch the end of that Miami New England game?
Oh, I certainly did.
I saw a little bit of it. Yeah.
Did you catch the last play, Jason?
Yeah, I heard about it. It was insane.
I actually watched the last 3 minutes of the game, so I watched the Patriots drive down the field and take the lead prior to that happening. So it was one of those things, like, Miami took the lead, then New England took the lead, and then the Miami Miracle, and, ugh.
Well, that's exactly what happened in the playoffs last year with New Orleans and Minnesota.
There was like six lead changes in the fourth.
Yeah, it was like Minnesota takes the lead. Oh, and then New Orleans takes the lead. And then Minnesota gets it back. And then New Orleans gets it back. And it's like, those games are awesome.
Well, I'll tell you what. The if you look at the stats of how many times lateral plays at the end of the game works, it's
like
0.5%. Yeah, it's terrible. The stats are terrible, and it was just one of those things. Rob Gronkowski pushed the stats in the right direction with his terrible angle and horrendous pursuit.
So obviously people are going to point to Gronk being kind of older and slower and, you know, the injuries and whatever. I was telling someone, even 22-year-old rookie out of Arizona Gronk would not have made that play.
I don't think there's any scenario where
he would have made that play.
He slipped.
He had the angle.
He slipped.
All he had to do was stay on his feet, and he slipped. That's terrible.
Yeah.
Honestly.
I just feel like I don't think he's ever really been super fast. I don't think he ever would have made that play.
Do you think teams rethink putting wide receiver types in the back to play defense against Hail Mary passes now?
No, because I think they're just so huge. Like
they're so huge. Yeah, the Falcons. Like that happens.
Well, no, you see the Falcons do it, and I think the Lions used to do it with Calvin Johnson. Like the Falcons will do it with Julio because he's 6'6" or 6'5" or something. Are you going to tell me that they have a defensive back who's 6'5" who can just jump up and swat a ball down and get to it before the other team's wide receivers?
If the team throws underneath and runs a hook and ladder, that's and true. Keeps that's lateraling, the... and now he has to play safety.
Yeah, but like you just said,
tackle.
Like you just said, though, the odds of that working are like 0.5%.
Like, I don't think teams are going to change based off of this one play. I think if any change happens, they're not putting back a tight end there. They're putting back a wide receiver who actually has speed and who can actually run, you know. But I think one of the big criticisms that has come of this situation is more towards Bill Belichick and his decision to put him in there. Solely based off the fact that Ryan Tannehill had a bum shoulder coming into this game. And that's on your coach to know that.
And he's not going to try a deep pass.
An 80-yard pass. That's like how long this pass would have had to be. So that's kind of one of those things where you have to think situationally. Do your research. Know the quarterback who's on the field. Know that he's injured and not Aaron Rodgers being able to bomb the ball across the entire field. And playing it smart. So I think that Bill Belichick does deserve some of the blame there. But good for the Dolphins. This couldn't have happened to a better team. Against a better team.
New England's record in Miami It's just abysmal.
How do they have their number? I don't understand how the Dolphins, of all teams, have the New England Patriots number and Tom Brady's.
Well, it's only at home. They can't win in Foxborough, but they can't lose in Miami. Whatever Miami's doing.
Yeah.
Although, you know the weirdest part about that play, though? So I was watching the highlights with my brother, and we were talking about, like, one of our first thoughts was, how does the fantasy scoring work on that? Because
I saw Jason. All right, so what happened
was...
So
it was Kenny... Like, I think what I saw was Kenyon Drake ended up getting credit for a reception, even though he just got pitched the lateral.
So...
Like, it was so weird.
I believe, if I remember correctly, what happened as I was watching it, because I was watching it on the fantasy cast. I didn't watch it in person.
Yeah.
I believe what it said happened was that Ryan Tannehill completed a pass 27 yards to Kenny Stills, and I'm making these numbers up, but then it said Kenny Stills pass complete to, I believe it was a pass complete from Kenny Stills to him, or
no, it was a lateral from Kenny Stills to Devontae Parker. He ran
any
like
yards
5 yards.
Gained, they go to that individual player. They don't.
Okay,
to
so Devontae Parker ran like 5 yards forward before
he
pitched it.
Five receiving yards, I believe.
So you only have the points for when the player has the football.
Yes.
That's what I would imagine, but then
but
the problem
like
is like
one player accumulates all of the points for them at the end. Whoever does the score, they
but yeah, then
the
problem is like
but
Devontae
does
Parker
Tannehill get all the yards for passing.
No,
and a touchdown. Would he get all the points
for
passing
was,
and the 4 points for the touchdown?
Because technically, that counted as a receiving touchdown for Kenyon Drake, but up until that point, he had zero receptions.
Right,
so
does
technically
Tannehill,
got.
Does Tannehill
he technically got a
55-yard
receiving touchdown and like the reception too, even though Kenyon Drake technically did not catch the ball, like he didn't get the reception. Does that mean that there are three receptions on that one pass completed?
I don't even know. Here, I'm trying to see if there's any passing stats.
Meanwhile, the last six games in Miami, the Dolphins have won five of the last six.
Damn.
So, over the last 6 years, New England has truly struggled in Miami.
And those have been some sad Dolphins teams, too.
That's crazy. Why can't they win in Miami?
I don't know.
Man, I don't get it. Don't.
But yeah, finding out. I'm going to try and figure out what Tannehill got credit for. You guys
yeah,
do that.
I'm
going to be searching Tannehill here.
All right, well, we'll move on while you look for that. Another big takeaway I had from this past week was the surprise of the Denver Broncos going down and losing to Nick Mullins and the...
Nick Mullins!
San Francisco 49ers.
Well, Nick, I'm sorry. I think even with this performance from Nick Mullins, I think your waiver wire team still loses.
Yeah, dude, I gave up on that a long time ago. I kind of just been trying to get rid of that segment in the history books altogether.
Yeah, I think it kind of fell flat when Hungy's quarterback just did not play at all.
Yeah, Flacco
still hasn't played.
I drafted Flacco, done.
But yeah, I think more specific to that game, I think the bigger takeaways are A, with the Denver Broncos doing poorly, Philip Lindsay finally had a bad game. And I say bad, he had 13.1 points, which isn't terrible, but for his standards, he's been getting 2 touchdowns each week. So he had a poor game for him. And obviously with Emmanuel Sanders coming out, a lot of people look to Cortland Sutton to be the guy to come out of Denver and catch most of the balls. But it appears that Deshaun Hamilton is the wide receiver who's been playing in the slot position in Denver, and that seems to be where Case Keenum is more comfortable throwing the ball. So that on top of Cortland Sutton having a little bit of an injury issue right now, not sure if he's playing this week or not, but I think Deshaun Hamilton is now the wide receiver to own for Denver if you're going to own a wide receiver. Right now he's only owned in 12.8% of leagues, and that's after this current waiver wire period. So if you're looking for a flex filler or somebody just to kind of take a spot on your bench, I would target Deshaun Hamilton with Denver.
Yeah, I think he's probably the guy, but it's kind of like Carolina. Like, there's, you know, the one guy, like, DJ Moore is, like, probably the guy to have. But honestly, I would stay away from all of them. Like, I think the whole Denver offense is just... the passing offense, at least, I don't
except
think
for
is
Phil
really...
Lindsay.
Yeah, like I was going to say, the passing offense, I don't think has been there really at all this season. I think Case Keenum has just not been the starting quarterback that they thought they were getting from Minnesota last year. So I think the only really fantasy-relevant player on that entire team is Philip Lindsay, and he's just been a stud. Even in a down week, like you said, he still had managed to get into the end zone and get a couple catches and stuff. But, yeah, and also in this game, George Kittle is a goddamn monster.
Yeah, I mean, he's unbelievable. I think he had a couple of mediocre weeks in a row, and so people were kind of doubting him, but nope, he's back.
Yeah, even taking away that 85-yard touchdown catch, he still had 6 catches for 135 yards.
Yeah.
So, quick jump back to the Miami Miracle. I have found stats here. Ryan Tannehill did get all of the passing yards and a passing touchdown from that. It is scored as, according to the NFL, it is scored as a 69-yard pass to Kenyon Drake. Kenyon Drake got the stats for it, believe it or not.
So did Devontae Parker just get nothing then?
This is just looking at this. This is saying it's a Kenyon Drake 69-yard pass play. Who are we looking for here?
So Devontae Parker, he was the one who got the pitch from Kenny Stills. And, like, it's nothing significant, but I would think that if he has the ball in his hands and he's running forward...
How long did he run with it?
Let's say he only had it for, like, 4 or 5 yards before he pitched it again. But even if those 4 or 5 yards, you would think that they would count as rushing yards, right?
It is counting him as one catch for 18 yards for Devontae Parker. But his long is 15.
So he did get the
yards.
So they gave him three receiving yards,
but
that's
they didn't
what it
count
was.
It as
okay,
a catch.
Okay, well, look at Kenyon Drake's. He got 52 receiving yards on the play.
Kenyon Drake has one catch for 55 yards. But
so
his
he didn't
longest,
get 69.
But his longest was 52.
Oh,
so
I see his first catch was only
for
a
3 yard. Yards.
So then I guess
for
the...
3 yards, but he also received 52 yards of receiving yardage on that play.
Oh, I see. So Kenny Stills is the only one who actually gets a reception on that
Kenny
play.
Kenny Stills gets a
right.
reception, yes. Finished with 135 yards.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I was curious, because that was the question Kevin and I were at. We were like, how the hell does this score fantasy-wise?
So you get the yards if you're the later people, but you don't get the catch.
Right, you get the yards,
that makes
but
sense.
only
That's so
Stills
weird.
Gets the catch, and Kenyon Drake gets the touchdown.
So huh. weird. You get the
and
yards.
Tannehill gets the passing touchdown, which went
so
into
he just
stats,
gets all of it.
Ryan Tannehill with a number two, his second highest passing yardage on the season, thanks to that final play at 265, and 3 passing touchdowns thanks to that. That's crazy. Some unbelievable statistics. Big thank you to NFL.com for breaking down that stat sheet.
Interesting.
They also
yeah, you
give
see something
you,
new all the time.
They also give you a number of other stats. The game weather was mostly cloudy. It was played outdoor on natural grass turf. Temperature was 82 degrees, 79% humidity. Winds were from the south-southwest at 13 miles an hour. The game officially started at 1:02 p.m. Referee was Pete Morelli.
All right.
Okay.
All right, pilot hungy. Anyway, one other takeaway I really had from this week, we've had in the past, you know, some pretty high-scoring matchups. Obviously, that Rams-Chiefs game is an unforgettable game that involved ridiculous scoring on both sides of the ball. But this week, we had a couple situations where we had a high-powered offense versus a high-powered defense. And I gotta say, surprisingly to me, the defense is... kind of came out on top in those matchups. I picked out 3 matchups in particular: the Chiefs versus Ravens, the Rams versus the Bears, and then I threw in there the Vikings versus the Seahawks. Vikings offense hasn't been as good recently, but they still have those big name players there, so I threw them in there because the Seahawks too do have a very well known good defense. In all of these matchups, the highly touted defense is the home team. So I don't know if how much of a role that played into it, and if that's a separate, completely separate argument, how much of a role the home team does have being this point in the season, especially for some of our northern teams that have outdoor stadiums in the cold weather.
Oh, yeah, the Rams having to play in Chicago?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that makes a huge thing. The Chiefs having to play in Baltimore. I mean, Baltimore's not that cold, but it's cold.
It's cold days.
The Rams having to play in Chicago. And you look at some of these teams, the Ravens, the Bears, the Seahawks, those teams are known for having tough places to play based on just the crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Just Ravens fans, Bears fans, Seahawks fans. Seahawks fans, they're actually back down to the actual Seahawks fans because the bandwagon fans jumped back on the Cowboys. But...
Are they the same group of people?
Yeah, it's the same group of people.
Okay, got it.
The Steph Curry fans, they jump on the Yankees bandwagon. It's terrible. It's the same group of people. But yeah, I mean, they're already known for crowd noise. Home field advantage is real in those three places. But when you get a team like the Rams who play in sunny L.A., and you've got to travel to Chicago in December, I mean, that's a real, real change of pace for them.
That's true. And someone made the point that... And it is interesting to look at. Jared Goff, like, if you just look at his personal life, he's from California. He went to Cal. He played at Cal. He gets drafted by Los Angeles. He's never played anywhere except sunny California. Like, it's definitely tough for him to go to these, you know, cold weather places, I would imagine. Like, it's hard to make that transition that late. I mean, you have some guys who maybe they grow up in Pennsylvania and they play in cold weather, or they go to school at Michigan or something, you know, something like that. But if you're just, your whole career is in the warmth, it's I would imagine it's hard to go up and play in Chicago of all places.
Yeah. So let's look at it from the reverse side. Let's reverse the roles and let's look at the playoffs, because more than likely these teams that were played away in these games and lost, or I guess the Chiefs, I'll say the scores first. The Chiefs beat the Ravens 27-24. I believe, did that one go to overtime?
What, the
Chiefs-Ravens?
That might have gone to overtime. I think it did. It did go to overtime.
Well, either way, very close game. Ravens probably scored a little bit more than I was expecting out of them. They did hold the Chiefs in check. Chiefs are by far the highest scoring team on a regular basis this year.
And the Ravens are probably the number one defense in the league this year.
So I'd say the Ravens lost that game, but they did well on offense, and they held the Chiefs kind of in check. So I'll give a tip of the hat to the defense there. In the other games, the defenses both won. Bears beat the Rams 15-6, and the Seahawks beat the Vikings 21-7. So I think, what if we reverse the roles and put the Rams at home versus the Bears?
I think the Rams win.
You think the offense comes out there? Defense steps
up? Oh, I think the offense comes out. I think that was the issue, that they didn't have any offense. Mm. They kicked two field goals. That was their whole offense the entire game. When you play in L.A., I think the offense comes out. I think the Bears at home in the cold were able to stop Jared Goff in the offense.
So you're putting the wins more on the home field advantage in
and
cold
the defense,
weather.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think the defense is just really good.
No, I'm saying it's both. The Bears' defense has been formidable this year.
But you're saying if the
I'm saying the combination of the two, the good defense in the cold at home. I'm saying you flip-flop, and I'm saying the Rams' offense would have more opportunity.
But you're saying that new stadium is a difference maker. You're saying the Bears are good with their defense, but their defense is not good enough.
I'm saying the Rams would be better. I'm saying the Rams would be better in the warmth.
Okay.
The Rams' offense would be better.
You would give more credit to the offenses.
I would give more credit to the Rams' offense not playing in Chicago in December.
So you're saying me as a girly owner, I don't have anything to worry about. It was just a one game.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. I think that's it.
I was saying that earlier when I said Todd Gurley should be the number one draft pick next year.
Mm-hmm. Vikings, I think, are a struggling offense altogether. I don't think that they're...
Oh, you stay far away from the Vikings right now after just firing John DeFilippo.
You got to start Adam Thielen still, though. I think you still got to start Stephon Diggs. Dalvin Cook, I feel like you still have to start. I mean, it's an offense that's hard to stay away from.
Who's calling the plays?
These are names, though. How can you bench Adam Thielen? How can you bench Stephon Diggs? Because right
what's
now?
The game plan now? Who knows? Maybe they turn the game plan into let's throw it to Kyle Rudolph 500 times a game.
I don't know, man. That's a doubtful. Tough one.
I
like defenses going forward is my point. I think that the maybe not for fantasy, but just in the playoffs. I think you might
playoffs.
Wanna, you might
yeah, you know who has a juicy matchup in defense for fantasy defense this week? The good old Houston Texans. They're already the second-ranked fantasy defense so far
Jets?
This year. They're playing the Jets.
Yeah. Darnold is back, though.
They are going to eat him.
Darnold is back.
They are
he
going
did pretty well against the Bills defense, who's
take
been pretty
a chomp
well.
Out of his foot or something, and just they're just going to destroy the Jets.
I don't know, man. Like I was just saying, the Jets did pretty well with Darnold back against the good Bills defense. And then the Houston Texans defense that you're talking about right now just struggled mightily against the Colts offense, who put
yeah, but
up
the,
0 points
this is a different story,
the
though. The Colts, I think the Jaguars game was kind of an anomaly, but an anomaly. I can't figure out that word. But I think the Colts.
See an enemy?
Yeah, but the Colts, they won like 8 straight games or something. They had like 6 straight games where Andrew Luck did not even get sacked. Like, the Colts are. They're definitely
the
on a hot streak, and they have,
is playing absolutely
they're, yeah,
lights out.
They're phenomenal. So I could easily see how the Texans might struggle against them, just because the Colts have a great offense. The offensive line is probably the best in all of football. They throw the ball a bajillion times a game. They got T.Y. Hilton back, and he's doing well. I mean, Eric Ebron is a touchdown scoring machine, and all Detroit fans are screaming at their TV every time they see him score a touchdown, but. Yeah, I think the Colts are a tough matchup to go against. That's why I actually benched the Bears D in my other league, because they were playing the Rams, because it's like, all right, this is a great defense, but they also are playing a great offense, so you don't know how to go about that. And I guess looking back now, it's obvious you should have started the Bears D. But yeah, the Texans, I think, have a great matchup this week. And then, unfortunately, especially if Wentz is out, maybe the week after that, and then week 17 for sure against Jacksonville.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I think that we should look forward to the Thursday night game. We've spent enough time on last week. Let's look a little bit ahead now.
Fair enough.
Only 4 teams typically in most leagues left in the playoffs, so hopefully we don't really need to spend too much time on waiver wire pickups. So we won't do that. We won't really focus on injuries. Only a couple big-name guys go down, so if we have time in a little bit, we'll get to that. But we'll start with the Thursday night game between the Kansas City Chiefs and the L.A. Chargers.
For control in the AFC West.
This is huge.
Yeah.
This game is huge because...
If things break right, this might be to get the one seed in the AFC.
This
is. It potentially could be.
But
yeah.
For a fantasy standpoint, if the Chiefs win this game, they are... pretty close to mathematically locking up that one seed, and they may rest their players.
No, I think they do lock the one seed if they win, don't they?
Well, there's 2 weeks left, so they could lose both of the last weeks, and then Chiefs or the Chargers could win both of the last two.
Okay.
So, yeah. But either way...
What I'm saying is it's only between the Chargers. No one else in the AFC could lock the one seed. Like, between the other three divisions.
Right, right.
Which is
insane. It would still be between the Chargers and the Chiefs. So, if going into the following week, they flex the Chiefs to a late-night game, the Chargers play earlier in the day and lose, they could clinch before they go into their Week 16 game.
Wow.
That's Pat Mahomes. That's Travis Kelce. That's... Spencer Ware's back. Spencer Ware, Damian Williams,
Tyreek
Hill.
So for fantasy, there is a lot on the line here. You're really pulling for a Chargers win here.
You are. You're pulling for a 44-45 loss for the Chiefs. You want your guys to do their thing, but you want a Chiefs loss if you've got their players on your team.
Hey, and the Chiefs defense is bad enough that may just happen.
Yeah, so
if they lock the one seed before that game even starts.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. And that's huge for a championship matchup, too, because, you know, they've probably got at least one Chiefs player on their team.
Man.
But let's look at this week. Let's not focus too much on that yet. They got to get past the Chargers. This is two good teams, good offenses, two pretty good defenses. So we don't know how this one's going to play out. Chiefs are, I think the offenses are going to come to play. You got some major injury questions, though. Austin Eckler obviously is out, already been ruled out with a neck and concussion injury.
Is Melvin Gordon back?
Melvin Gordon is questionable right now.
He's going to play. If Eckler's out, Melvin Gordon's going to play.
They don't know that yet, though. He's like, they know he's
it.
Right
they're just, they just can't say it, but they know it.
All right, well, if Melvin Gordon's back, Josh
it's huge
Jackson,
for fantasy owners.
He can get out. Jackson can, you can not worry about having to start him if Gordon's a go. If Gordon's not a go, then Jackson's the only guy there in the backfield.
And if he's not owned, get on that.
Yeah.
I do worry about, though, with Gordon, you know, coming off of a multi-week injury, I worry about, like, the Leonard Fournette effect from earlier this year where he had that strained hamstring, he missed a couple games, came back, and then immediately re-injured it. Or maybe Melvin Gordon comes back and it's a timeshare from the get-go. Like, maybe they put him on almost like a baseball pitch count. Like they say, Melvin Gordon,
you're
coming back.
You're literally playing for the division right now. I don't think they're putting anybody on a pitch count.
But they're also, this is a third year back. This is the future of their team. They're trying to protect him as well. So they're playing this fine line where they're trying to get the one seed, but they're also trying to protect their guys' long-term health. So.
But you put him in and you lock the one seed, you've got an extra week of rest for him.
If you're a Chargers
fan. But I can easily see them just saying, like, all right, Melvin, you're playing, you're going to split time with this rookie, and we're not going to work you too hard in your first game back from injury, and then next week you'll kind of get thrown back into it fully. So I would be scared about this if I was a Melvin Gordon owner, that even if he is active, he might not play the whole time.
Let's not look at this from fantasy. If you are a Chargers fan, do you want them to risk bringing him back slightly early from his injury to try and compete for the one seed, or would you prefer your star running back rest another week, even though it's against the team you're competing for that one seed?
No,
you have him healthy for the
playoffs.
I bring
him back early for the one seed. That, I mean,
as a fan of the team,
I would say rest
him. As a fan of a team who just watched a team get the one seed and run the table in the playoffs last year with a backup quarterback, yes, home field advantage is absolutely everything.
Not if you're in Los Angeles.
Absolutely everything.
Matt, have you seen the home field advantage in Los Angeles there?
Yeah, I have.
Does that
seen
change
it.
Your argument, knowing that it's L.A. Chargers that we're talking about, as opposed to?
I mean, I guess
another?
There's that benefit where
you want to go to Kansas City.
Yeah,
if
I guess there's the benefit
of it's
City, not being
Kansas
losing.
City. You do not want to go to Kansas City.
That's true. I'll give you that.
It's just, I don't know. I mean, it's just tough to say, like, do you bring him back too early? And maybe the Austin Eckler injury just kind of forces them to bring him back early. And maybe he does pull a Leonard Fournette and re-injure himself and land back on the DL. Whereas if he had just stayed out the whole time, then he'd be back next week, no problem, good to go. But it's – yeah, I for a fantasy perspective, if I'm – and I'm not – I don't have any shares of Melvin Gordon. But if I was, I would be a little hesitant about starting him just because you don't know – what kind of plan they have for him.
Yeah.
Even if he is totally healthy and he plays the whole game, maybe he only plays 30 snaps as opposed to his usual 50 or something like that.
Tell you what, though, as a Keenan Allen owner, I'm loving it because they are targeting him with these
for
running
sure.
back issues that they're having. So he's definitely a good guy to have going into this week. Especially if they're going to be in a shootout with the Chiefs. You know, you can't rely on your running backs for everything in a shootout, especially. So,
one of the things to keep in mind now that we are well within playoff time is that we've reached that point in the season where there are Saturday NFL games.
Before we leave this one, I just wanted to flip over to Kansas City side of the ball.
Ah!
Today, it looked like kind of news. A lot of times players come off the Sunday injury report and are listed as questionable throughout the week, but you don't think it's that serious. Spencer Ware has been listed as questionable all week long, and today was changed to doubtful.
Mm. Ooh.
No bueno.
So who's the running back now?
Damian Williams. Now, be careful, because he's definitely somebody who you want to pick up, but the Chiefs also have another guy running back on their team whose name is D. Williams. So make sure you get the right one when you go to pick him up.
Ha!
Daryl Williams.
General and Damian Williams are the two running backs this week?
Yes, you don't want Daryl.
Are they related?
I do not believe so.
That would actually be hilarious.
Wasn't it the Cardinals who had... Oh, yeah, it was the Cardinals. They had Chris Johnson and David Johnson a few years ago.
Yep. Yes. CJ2K.
But Damian Williams is the one you want in your team. He's been the one that has done well. 2 weeks, he played a little bit and had 5.5 points against the Oakland Raiders. Last week, he obviously came in when Spencer Ware got hurt. He came in, had 8 rushes for 14 yards, so not a whole lot there, but he did get it in the end zone once, and he also did get it in the end zone on a receiving play. He had 4 catches for 16 yards, so not a whole lot of yards, but this is one of those things where he's the only running back on the best offense in football, so you want him. And again, this is against the Baltimore Ravens, one of the best defenses in football. So he had pretty good stats, found the end zone twice. So solely because of game plan,
in the red zone.
Just because of game plan, he's the only running back. I picked him up in all my leagues, and I'm starting him in one league for sure, and possibly in a second league.
Are they playoffs?
Yeah.
Starting him in the playoffs? Good for you.
Yeah, dude. He's a...
rolling the dice.
I did that last week. I picked up Jalen Samuels, waiver wire pickup, and I played him in both leagues, and he paid off for me.
It's
all about the opportunity. It's all about the matchup. I think if you have a star running back like that, like a Melvin Gordon or even Eckler or Kareem Hunt being a dumbass or James Conner getting injured, I think if you can go and find that direct backup who's guaranteed to get that work in a high-volume, high-value role, I think even if they are a waiver wire pickup, you can pick them up and confidently start them in the playoffs just because they're in that offense and they're in that role, and you know that they're going to get those valuable touches close to the goal line and possibly get touchdowns.
Yeah.
So now we can move on.
Yes. So we've reached that weird time that there are Saturday games in the NFL.
I feel like I forget every year until like this week. That's a thing.
And they just started because today. We need football all the time. It's necessary for human life. And now that college football is taking a couple weeks off, let's throw some games on Saturday. Fantastic.
Wait, Hungy, I feel like that quote should be on like a pillow or something, or like a mug. Like, football is necessary for human life.
It should be. Copyright Hungy.
How do you guys feel about that?
Well, I love it. I don't have a problem with it at all.
Saturday games.
Well, I don't have a problem with it.
I'm okay with it. There could be football on every day of the week, and I would be happy.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I think the Thursday ones. I enjoy the Thursday ones just because it's like a game to look forward to, and like you have it on a day of the week that, you know, it's in the middle of almost middle of the week or something. But like, it's just weird that all the players hate it because they hate those short weeks. But then at the same time, I'm like, who's the Thursday night game? Like, got to set your lineup and stuff. So it's like something that you look forward to, but you know all the players just despise playing
it. Yeah, but 90% of the time, the Thursday games actually suck.
Exactly. Even though there was that commercial campaign trying to hype up how great the games were this year, and they were still terrible.
There's been a lot of gimmicks. Color Rush was an example.
Oh, God, that was bad.
Right. And now they've screwed over teams that have multiple alternate uniforms now because they have to pick one. But the only exception to that was the Lions, who they let wear the all-gray uniforms twice as their alternate, and then let them wear the throwbacks on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. The only exception to that rule, which I don't understand. But regardless.
I think that I did look at my matchups this week, and I thought it was interesting because in one of my playoff matchups, the guy who I'm playing against has all but 2 of his players play on Thursday and Saturday.
Really?
I do not have any players play on Thursday or Saturday.
So you know what you have to do on Sunday.
Yes.
You know what you have to do on Sunday.
It's going to be very interesting to, like, watch those games and just, like...
hope.
Right. You know how when you're playing against players, you have to, like, root against them, but...
But you don't have to do that because they already all played.
But I mean for the Saturday games.
Yeah. Now, Saturday is going to be interesting. Make sure you set your lineups.
Yeah, we already touched on the Texans-Jets game, kind of how we feel how that one's going to go.
You also have mediocre Browns versus mediocre Broncos.
I think the Broncos are a good team. I think they just had a rough week last week.
They're 6-7.
I still think that they're a good team in terms of just all around. I wouldn't say they're a top-tier team. No,
I think the defense
is
good.
Putting them up there
I wouldn't call them a good team. They're 6-7. and this is me, an Eagles fan, also 6-7.
Do you think they're better than the Browns?
The Broncos?
Yeah.
No, I think the Browns are better than Broncos.
The Browns are 5...
The Browns are 5-7-1. I think they're better than the Broncos.
Yeah. Man, what a weird world we live in. If you had said that sentence like 3 years ago, everyone would have said you were nuts. The Browns are better than the Broncos.
The Browns are not a good team, but they're better than the Broncos.
Yeah, they have good players. I mean, it's weird, like, for fantasy-wise, when you look at the Browns, like, I think at this point, Nick Chubb is a must-start no matter what. Like, he's getting the work, he's getting the yards, he's talented. Looks like their line is doing a good job for him. They have other options that he's not facing, like a stack box or something. But it's like Jarvis Landry, I never know what to make of him. He's like one of those guys that you would think, like, on paper, would be the perfect, like, PPR receiver just because he's that slot guy. He catches everything, and Baker's a rookie quarterback. But for some reason, he just, like, hasn't put it together super well this year. And Baker's been having great days, but, like, no one else, like, Njoku's been kind of inconsistent. Jarvis is the only receiver really doing anything. They have Antonio Callaway, I guess, but outside of a long touchdown catch every once in a while, he hasn't really done anything. So it's pretty much just, like, Nick Chubb on that team. And then I guess if you're starting Baker, it's because you were streaming quarterbacks, in which case you just play the matchups and you pick between him or Lamar Jackson or, you know, whoever else has a good matchup on the waiver wire that week. And then on the Broncos, it's pretty much just Phillip Lindsay. Like, there's no other options on that offense either. So it's just like a running back battle, and that's it.
Yeah, pretty much must-start players, I feel like. Kind of on the Brown side of the ball, Nick Chubb and Jarvis Landry. If you're made it to this point in the playoffs, they're probably flex players for you, but they're probably must-start flex players for you. But Phillip Lindsay, I feel like...
If Jarvis Landry...
He became mine.
If Jarvis Landry should flex, he's got a pretty good team.
Yeah, well, I think that some other guys have been a little bit more consistent. But either way, a couple good players to watch before Sunday. A couple good games.
Let's blow through the
injuries. So we got some other injuries to kind of go through. We're just going to go through real quick since we don't have much time left.
The biggest one, and I'm taking the lead on this, and I have a lot to talk about.
Make it quick.
Biggest one actually jumped in today.
Out of nowhere, too.
So, Carson Wentz. Doug Peterson comes out for his press conference today and announces that Carson Wentz was held out of practice today due to back spasms. Interesting. One of the reporters asks him...
A lot of guys miss practice one day a week.
Right. Yeah. And some people miss for back spasms. Yeah. It happens. You have back spasms, you miss practice, you might be questionable for the week. It's one of those things you work through.
No big deal.
They ask Doug Peterson what Carson's status is. He says day-to-day. Yeah, so they ask him, what is his status for Sunday? Doug's answer, I don't know. We don't know yet. We have to see.
All right, interesting. Didn't know that he was questionable. All right.
So Carson Wentz gets changed to questionable. Interesting. A lot of people are questionable. They don't have the probable designation at all anymore. So if you're even remotely injured, you have to be listed as questionable.
It's probably probable, right?
You would think. Not even 10 minutes later, Ian Rappaport of NFL Network tweets, and I will read you the tweet word for word, because it just blew everybody in the football world out of the water. Quarterback Carson Wentz, dealing with a back issue, is not expected to play this week, sources say. Depending on the result, given the time of year, Wentz may not play again in 2018. The team is still gathering information on his health.
Panic!
What is interesting about this is that the Eagles, and none of the Eagles beat reporters in the local area, have said anything remotely similar to what Ian Rappaport said. Only that he's questionable for this week. No one said anything about anything going forward except Ian Rappaport, but he just jumped on it and ran with it, and now no one knows what to believe and what is happening.
I believe Rapp, man.
Well, back spasms are one thing, but they said they need to do additional tests on Carson. You don't do additional tests for back spasms.
Well, the thing.
So, is this a recurring back injury? Is this a serious back injury that has to hold Carson out for the season? There are some serious red flags with what has happened today. Serious red flags. And I honestly, I don't know what to believe. I don't know what not to believe. I don't know what to think about Carson's future.
I think if Rappaport is saying that they are questioning whether he will play at this point in the season for the rest of the year, that's not coming out of nowhere. That specific statement saying that it is questionable if he will play at all this year. But somebody had to have said that to him.
If he's been battling this injury, which would make sense solely if you look at his play and his mobility this year. Back injuries are serious. But if look at his play and his injury, and you were to tell me straight up, Carson has been fighting a back injury all season, I would say, okay, well, that kind of makes sense for his regression this year. I could blame that on a back injury. That'd be fine. But if you were to tell me that he's been fighting it all season and the Eagles are just deciding now to sit him for the rest of the season when they are still alive in the playoff race, you've got to be out of your mind.
Mm.
Why would you wait until you are 3 games from the end of the season but still in the playoff race to make this call?
Yeah, I don't know. I think if they're going to be sitting him, like you said, they're still competing for that last playoff spot. It's got to be serious if they're sitting him.
I love Nick Foles as much as the next guy, but what is happening in this Eagles front office right now? It
must be taken after the Sixers, just with these vague reports that no one seems to know what's happening.
God, I don't even want to talk about Sixers and reports, because all I think about is Markelle Fultz, and I don't want to think about Markelle
exactly.
Fultz.
I just... There's so many questions about how long this has been an issue. How long have they known about it? Is this the reason? Is this the setback that Carson didn't come back week one? Is this what happened in training camp that they didn't really clear up? You know, there's nothing here that's making sense to me.
Well, let's put on the fantasy hat for a second. Let's assume Nick Foles is playing and he's starting and he gets the whole first week. He gets this whole week in practicing with the first team. What does that do for Josh Adams, Golden Tate, Zach Ertz, and Alshon Jeffrey?
I'm staying away.
I think it boosts Alshon.
I'd stay away.
Alshon dropped down, but I mean Alshon was his favorite target.
I would say of the two receivers, I think Golden Tate might be the favorite there.
I don't think Ertz changes. I still think Ertz.
No, Ertz is still, he's going to get his where he's so good.
Ertz is still a must start.
Yeah, he can't not get catches and touchdowns. But I think of the Alshon Golden, I think Golden might be the more valuable one there.
At this point, though, the thing is, you don't want to rely on a guy that you think is going to do well. You want guys, and hopefully have guys, that you know are going to do well.
Something
like this is detrimental. You know, for a fantasy owner, having a team switch up their quarterback at this point in the season, that kills their players. That kills your trust in a player.
No, I hope you have better options. You're talking about the guy that led that receiving corps to a Super Bowl last year.
You're talking about
the Super Bowl MVP.
You're talking
There's
about
one
playoffs.
Different receiver. There's one. They added Golden Tate. Everyone else played for Nick last year. Everybody knows
how much time has he been away from the field. How many Sundays has he not played?
He practices with them every week.
Hungy, though. Come on, now.
They won three playoff games. They won 3 playoff games, including the Super Bowl last year.
Oh, my God. I would not. You cannot trust anybody the first week with a new quarterback who hasn't played all season long.
They outscored New England.
Come on.
They put up 38 points on the Vikings' top-rated defense. I mean, what else can you say?
The counter-argument is the Raiders game and the Cowboys game last year.
That was them finding
couple.
His groove.
So the Eagles offense
scared me
with Carson
Wentz. Who knows? It might happen
again.
What?
I said the Eagles offense scared me with Carson Wentz. They scare me even more with Nick Foles.
Don't be that guy. Don't be telling me that Nick Foles is better than Carson.
That's what you're trying to tell me right now.
You're telling me that the team is...
And like, I'm not trying to make that argument,
you were saying that it's detrimental to start the wide receivers without
Carson. It's detrimental
Carson.
To have the quarterback who's been playing all season long, who's been thrown to you every Sunday, go down at this point in the season.
Okay.
No, you're arguing two different things. Hungy, I think you're thinking that Nick says this offense is going to be better. Nick, I think you're saying... that the options are not as stable without
Wentz. I'm saying, as a fantasy owner,
do you trust Alshon Jeffrey
more
now?
The Eagles skill players are still a viable option for you with Nick Foles under center.
I think they lost their viability a while ago while Carson Wentz was still their quarterback. I think they lost their viability, all of them.
Really? Because I think trust Ertz is the number two receiver in fantasy right now.
Okay, or so I still trust Ertz, but even him last week, he did awful. He shit the bed. A lot of people were relying on him all year long, and now when they need him in the playoffs, he shit the bed. This was the worst time to possibly do that. And that's my point, is that a quarterback going down affects everybody on that team for fantasy. They might not skip a beat, but it affects all of them.
Well, that remains to be seen. We'll know more after the Rams game.
We will, but we have to wait for that one. Just a couple injuries to watch out for. Odell was out last week, so you want to make sure that he's a go this week if you have him. Hopefully he got past without
him. Yeah,
that
was an interesting...
Sterling Shepard didn't really provide much of a filler. I think he only had like 9 points or something.
No, it was
like that.
It was the Saquon Barkley show.
Yeah, so Doug Baldwin was out last week. It was precautionary to keep him out, so hopefully he comes back and he's healthy if you need him this week.
James Conner was out.
James Conner was out. He had, I believe, that ankle injury.
Yep.
We don't know if he's going to be back, so monitor him this week.
Yeah, right now I don't think it's super optimistic, but there is a possibility. No. He's still questionable, but it's kind of on the lower confidence side of questionable. So I think Jalen Samuels is another good option this week. If you still have him
and Connor's out, definitely go with Samuels as your filler there. A couple tight ends out and questionable this week. Jordan Reed went out at the very beginning of last week, so that killed a lot of people in their fantasy lineups. And
he still doesn't have a quarterback to throw to him, though.
Yes. So Jordan Reed's out. Austin Hooper's questionable. Jimmy Graham's questionable. They're thinking about, I saw same thing with Carson Wentz.
Jimmy Graham doesn't have a head coach to call plays to go his way.
And it's one of those things where the Packers, I believe they said, are mathematically out of the playoffs at this point. So why risk bringing in an injured player? That might be the logic the Packers use. So pay attention, Jimmy Graham, see if he's in this week and or the rest of the year.
If you're still starting Jimmy Graham, though, you're really hurting a tight end.
Yeah. Couple tight
end.
Either
that or you drafted a really great team around him and he just kind of was your Achilles heel all year.
Which is the case for one of the people I'm playing against this week, Jimmy Graham. He's been trying to get tight ends from people all season long and nobody's given him one.
James Conner did sit out practice today.
Okay. But yeah, some tight end options. Like I said, we have three definitely guys who were probably starting that have gone down this past week. Ian Thomas kind of came in there. He had 12.2 points last week in Carolina in spot of Greg Olsen. So this week they're going up against New Orleans, who's not actually terrible against tight ends. But they have a questionable secondary in general, so... If you're looking for a tight end, he's only owned in 38.8% of leagues right now. Vance McDonald's been, you know, on the cusp of 50% all year long, so go grab him if he's available. He's the reliable guy in Pittsburgh. Let's see. CJ Uzoma from Cincinnati is playing against Oakland this week, so while he's maybe not the best option out there, he's got a really good matchup. So, a couple good guys out there. Hopefully your lineup is all set, and you're ready for the semifinals of the playoffs.
Yeah.
We'll get you through to the finals and get you that cup, chip, whatever it is.
Jason, I think it's time. Jason?
Jason?
I think we lost Jason.
I think we lost Jason.
Wow, this is a first.
All right, well, video call ended.
Well, this is a first.
We were reaching the end of the podcast there anyway, so I think we'll finish this one out with Jason.
We're going to make Jason do 2 fireball hot takes next week.
Because we all know that that's what you guys were...
that's what we really live for here. Week 2 of the playoffs. Good luck. Some of us are not in the playoffs. Some of us are holding last place trophies in their hands right now.
I'm in the semis for 3 of my leagues. So
well,
I've got a lot to look forward to this week.
Three out of four.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, in the 1 of my 5 that I made the playoffs this year, which is horrendous numbers on my end, I put up in the first week of the playoffs a season low point total. and lost in the first week of the playoffs.
Mm.
Do you know how demoralizing that is? As a person who hosts a fantasy football podcast, to only make
there's
one...
been a lot of demoralizing things about your fantasy football season this year.
It really hurts. It really, really hurts.
If you've listened into all of our episodes, man, you've been with him for all of this.
It is bad.
Hungy's a beaten man. He's
I'm in full depression
because of fantasy football.
Ridiculous.
I'm on cloud nine because I've got lots of money that I can win still. So
piss off. We'll be back next week going into fantasy football championship week. If you play a 17-week fantasy season, just know you have the worst commissioner and you should just punch him or her in the face because they are just doing you no favors.
Agreed.
Honestly, the best case scenario there is that the commissioner makes the playoffs and half their lineup sits. So you can just laugh at them.
Well, there you go. I'll be setting my lineup, so don't worry about that.
We'll see you next week leading into Fantasy Football Championship Week. And we'll have a better idea whether Nick Foles can lead the Eagles to victory.
All right, good luck, everybody.
See you later. Go Birds!